97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
I always like to let this one run a little.
Love it.
Sue and I like this one from The Who, Don't Let Go of the Coat. You can always check out the bumper music on the X, formerly Twitter, at Mark Reardon KFTK. I post the list each and every evening when I'm working. We did not have a list for Friday because Ryan Rector was here. I got a good one for 5:45. Every once in a while, I dig a little deeper into the catalog.
I love it.
And this is a little deeper dive into Toto, believe it or not. So it's not Hold the Line.
You know I love Toto.
It's not Africa.
It's a different song.
You challenge you to come up with that song between now and a half an hour from now. We'll see if you can do it. This is, by the way, I have great audio today. Mondays are kind of tough just because I never know if I can get to everything, and sometimes it's a little harder. But over the weekend, I Jennings has blown up into this thing, Sue.
Yes, he has.
He has, and I've known Scott for, 7 or 8 years now, even though our mutual friend Joe Arnold and I go back 30 years. And ironically, when I used to listen to Joe on the radio when he was on WHAS in Louisville, Scott was his news guy. Like, in the middle of the night, he was his news guy. And then Joe's like, yeah, remember that guy that used to do news with me? He's a political consultant. He runs campaigns, and he's on CNN. And this was kind of like the infancy days of him getting some appearances on CNN. So over the weekend, he sends me this this article. You know, our friend, some of this gets cross-pollinated, if you will. Our friend David Strom from hotair.com, right? He's a regular guest, David is, and he does a part for hotair.com, which is called Things I Like. Okay, so he finds something that he likes, and it might be in pop culture, might be a movie, might be something like that. So this weekend, and Jennings sent this to me, of course, Things I Like, Scott Jennings on CNN. And he kind of goes on and on and on, and then he, includes the clips. There's a guy out there, I don't even know who this guy is, at Grage Dustin, and he tweets out a clip from Jennings that says, on this episode of At Scott Jennings, Kentucky Saves the World, and this was the line. I just think this is brilliant, by the way.
A lot of men think Democrats care more about dudes who want to become women than dudes who just want to be dudes.
Well,
and no hunting, cosplay, or cringy videos is going to change it. The bed is made.
Oh, that was a great line. And then Abby Phillips, they all go nuts. They can't handle him. He will be here, Fred, on Wednesday, right? Jennings is going to join us on Wednesday. On the presidential race, just to throw this in here as well, because we're going to talk with Andy Puzder about the economy and the race as well. But there's a lot of people that think that the polling is looking very good for Trump right now. It really is. And Harris seems to be floundering a bit. But Larry Sabato talked about maybe Trump even underperforming in some of these polls.
The better pollsters, the ones who are willing to spend money to do their job better and not be embarrassed, take into account people who were hiding from the pollsters, who favored Donald Trump disproportionately in 2016 and 2020. And that's a good thing. Here's the bad news, because I've talked to many of the pollsters about this. They have no idea if it's going to work this time either.
Yeah, that's what we don't know. But I do think that some of the Trump support is being undercounted, but some of this stuff gets so goofy, you just don't know. What I do know is that there's panic on the part of the Democrats. You can kind of see it. You can see the legacy media members fire off in angry ways against Vance yesterday, Martha Raddatz and Kristen Welker, right? You can see it in where Kamala is doing the campaign appearances. Look, they're worried about Michigan and Wisconsin and these Senate races right now, which is very interesting. Andy Puzder is back with us, former CEO of CKE Restaurants, the chair of the Second Vote Value Investments Group, and the board member of the Jobs Creator Network, and of course, he's got strong ties to Wash U here and St. Louis. How are you, Andy? Welcome back. How are you on this Monday afternoon?
I'm doing great, Mark. Thanks for having me on.
Well, let's talk about the economy and where we are with the economy. Do you think, let me just start with a broad question here, because we know what Jay Powell did in the Fed. Are we heading toward a recession, in your opinion, as an economist, or not?
Well, if you look at this from the perspective of just regular Americans, people that are out there going to the gas station, going to the grocery store, trying to pay their bills, trying to buy houses. I think we're not only are we going to be in a recession, but we have been in a recession for quite a while. You know, normal people don't pay attention to every jobs number that comes out. They don't pay attention necessarily to the GDP numbers that come out quarterly. They go to the grocery store. They go to the gas station. They look at their paychecks and they look at the cost of things, and they make a determination as to whether or not they're better off or worse off than they were previously. And for the past 4 years, it's been straight downhill for the American people. And I think they are experiencing a recession, whether or not we technically have a recession.
You know, it seems that way because, you know, I think that, and you hear this from President Trump and J.D. Vance in particular, that I think people still are struggling. The one thing that always pops for me, Andy, and I don't know how this manifests itself, but I consider myself maybe a part-time economist. I'm not as good as you, but I look at different things. And the one number that has really been dramatically different than from 4 years ago, when we were in the pandemic, you know, the amount of household debt was at, I think it was an all-time low. Now we're in the opposite. So people are still acting maybe like we're not in a recession. They're spending like we're not in a recession, and that money's going on the credit cards, and that's going to come back to haunt people, I think, and haunt this U.S. economy, isn't it?
Yeah, the savings rate is extremely low. We've spent through the pandemic savings. People have run up a credit card debt to highs we've never seen before. It's over $1 trillion in credit card debt. And that's at these very high interest rates that you're now paying on credit cards. People have even started cashing in their 401k plans. People have been drawing on the 401k plans, even with the penalties that they incur when they do so. So just to meet everyday expenses, just to live the life they've become used to living, people are having to go into extreme debt and use the resources that they've compiled over their lifetimes. So this is a very bad time for Americans. And I think you see it in the polling on the economy. You see it in the reaction that both Kamala Harris and Joe Biden get when they get in front of anything other than a friendly crowd. And in fact, I don't know if you saw it, there was a video circulating of President Obama addressing a crowd in Michigan yesterday, and very loud protest using a profanity just with respect to the name Joe Biden. People are just fed up. They're just tired. And they're ready for something new. Now, Harris has been trying to convince people that she's something new, which is It's kind of strange. She's campaigning for her. She has Joe Biden, Barack Obama, and Bill Clinton. I mean, that's really not. I mean, you talk about something that's not new. I mean, these guys, two of them are clearly not new, and Obama certainly had
Andy,
his time in office.
Did you see Clinton? Did you actually see it? He looks awful.
Yeah, I did.
He sounds awful. I didn't even know. I was talking about this earlier. When I first saw the clip with Clinton on Twitter this morning, I didn't have the audio up, and I'm like, who is that guy? And I couldn't believe how old he looks. So, yeah, I don't know what they think. They got Hillary out there trying to help her. Is that a good idea? I mean, I welcome it.
Well, it's a good idea for Trump.
Right.
It's not a good idea for Harris. They're as you said just a moment ago. They're very scared right now. They've spent a tremendous amount of money. They've spent two or three times as much as Trump has spent. And even if you watch Fox News, you're seeing these Harris ads one after the other. And so they've spent a tremendous amount of money, and the only way the needle has moved is against her. The needle has moved down. It hasn't moved up in her favor. So they're scared. They're nervous, and they should be, because this is the time when you want to surge. This is the time when you want to start. You want to get the momentum right now, because we're really just weeks away from the election, and of course, people are voting already. So you're already maybe benefiting from the surge. But the final election day is, I think, November 4th or 5th, and we're very close to that.
It's hard for me to believe that if this is a change election, and, you know, Harris and Walz have tried to make it maybe a change election, even in their own way, even though there wouldn't be a change because she's said very definitively that she has no issues with what Joe Biden has done and maybe wouldn't act any differently. But I guess I call it down to the fact that there's a lot of people out there that have suffered that don't have cash because they've run out of it. And by the way, I think that some of this, and I don't know where this lands us, but Andy, most people, if they're in a cash crunch, what do? They refinance their home, right, if they have equity. And then they get the cash that way. Well, that's why they're going to the credit cards, because everyone's got 3.2 or 3.5 on their loans, and they don't want to refi higher, so they're getting into trouble with that, which I think is going to really end up being a bad thing for the economy. But it's just hard for me to believe that if you're asking the question, are you better off 4 years ago than you were, that 90% of the people out there are going to say, yeah, you know what, I was better off under Trump.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, look, you had the lowest unemployment rate in history for every race and both sexes. You had family income hit historic highs. You had poverty hit historic lows. And you had income inequality decline, all while wages, real wages, that's inflation-adjusted wages, increase. And it all happened with extremely low inflation. Now, those are very macroeconomic things, but they impacted everybody's life. And how you could say you were better off today than you were 4 years ago, unless you're very rich. I think the rich have done just fine under Joe Biden. The stock market's done well, and real estate assets have increased in value. So if you're wealthy and you have assets, you've probably done pretty well. For the middle class, the working class, it's been a disaster, and it's not going to change. Harris says, as you pointed out, Harris said, I don't know one thing I would have done differently when it comes to Afghanistan, when it comes to the border, when it comes to the economy. She couldn't think of one thing she would do differently. So now we know. We know who she is, and we know where she's coming from.
So where are you? You know, one of the things I don't think we've ever talked about, and I do have some concerns here when I hear Trump and Vance talking about the tariffs, but where is Andy Puzner on the issue of the tariffs and what Trump did the last time and what might happen here? Because obviously Harris and the Democrats are saying, look, that's a tax increase on the American people because that's going to increase the cost of goods. We all love our cheap stuff from Walmart, right? So your thoughts on that?
Well, it's just baloney. Look, Trump put tariffs in, very strong tariffs against China. It generated significant income, tariff income, and Joe Biden could have canceled them at any time. He could have gotten rid of those tariffs. The Biden-Harris administration could have eliminated the Trump tariffs from his first term. They didn't eliminate them. Actually, they just increased them. They put a very stiff tariff on electric vehicles being imported from China. That's because in certain circumstances, tariffs are a good idea. If a country is subsidizing an industry with the intent of destroying an industry in America, it makes perfect sense for the government to stand up and say, you need to stop. We're not going to let you destroy our businesses and take our jobs. So there are circumstances where tariffs make sense. National defense is another area where tariffs make sense. President Trump, when he spoke in front of the New York Economic Club a few weeks ago, said, look, we get parts from our F-16s that come from countries that are our enemies. That can't continue. We have to be able to manufacture these products in the United States. So we have to be able to meet the needs of our defense system so that we can defend our country. So there are very many circumstances where tariffs make sense. And the last point is, one thing you should always know about President Trump, whenever he talks, he's negotiating. And he's already set himself up so that when he comes in, if he's positioning himself so when he negotiates with other countries with respect to tariffs they have on American goods, he will be in a better position than any president who's ever served, including himself his last term. He set himself up to negotiate great deals for us. I'd hate to see it go to waste, and I hate to see this criticism from the left when the tariffs he put in place, they didn't even rescind.
Yeah, well, that's a good point as well. I guess my main concern moving forward is what, because this isn't even being discussed, the tax breaks, because they automatically sunset, right, into next year. So Congress is going to have to do something. I think the legacy media is letting Harris and Walz completely off the hook, as we kind of knew that they would, because she's been out there saying that they're going to pull back all those. That means a tax increase for everybody in this country.
Yeah, just if the Trump tax cuts expired, working and middle class Americans will see their taxes go up, and wealthy Americans will see the tax rate they have to pay on their income go up. They won't see the taxes they pay go up. They're actually paying much higher taxes now. They're paying about 45% of all income tax collected. That's the top 1%, pays about 45%. During the Obama administration, before the Trump tax cuts, they paid about 38%. Of all income taxes. So when you lower tax rates on wealthy people, they realize more income and they pay more in taxes. When you raise the rates on wealthy people, they defer income and don't pay as much in taxes. Middle class and working class individuals under the Trump tax cuts all got tax cuts, and they will see Harris can't keep just part of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act in effect and let the part that applies to the top 10% expire. The Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is a single bill. If it expires as it's set to in 2025, everybody will see their taxes go up.
Don't you think she's getting completely left off the hook on this particular issue? She unveils this in August. She's talking about this, you know, this plan, tax relief for more than 100 million middle class and lower income Americans. How about just keeping the Trump tax cuts in place? That would provide a lot of relief, but nobody follows up. Has that been asked one time in a debate or with, you know, any of these interviews so far, the few that she's done? Nobody has pressed them on that.
It's hard to tell what happened in the CBS, the 60 Minutes interview, because they took answers from one question and applied it to a different question, and they edited things out. But I will say that the journalist who did that interview did try and press her on these taxes a little bit.
Yeah.
He's the only one. And she said, well, she was, you know, how are you going to raise these taxes if the Republicans, are going to end up very likely in control of the Senate? And she had no answer.
Yeah, right.
So she's going to do an interview with Brett Baer tomorrow. Maybe Brett will ask her. I hope he will ask
her. Well, you know, we talked about that earlier, Dandy. You're right.
This.
She's going to probably, I'm shocked that she's doing that interview because I think she's going to be pressed in a way that she really hasn't. I'll give Whitaker a little credit because he seemingly did, you know, follow up. That's something that's been, the legacy media has been unwilling to do, ask a follow-up question. We've seen that in the debates. But I do think that this could be interesting with Brett. And doesn't that kind of tell you that they're a little, it reeks of a little desperation there, I think.
Yeah, I'm not sure why they've agreed. Other than they're desperate, I don't know why they would agree to do an interview with Brett Baer on Fox News right now. I think that she hopes she's going to be able to show that she's competent, she can handle this interview, and I'm sure that no matter what happens to her, the press will praise her performance. And I don't know that Brett Baer is one who's going to push her particularly hard, but I hope he will be more of a journalist than anybody else who's interviewed him so far.
I think he will.
And will ask her tougher questions and hope that and hope he will press her to answer those tough questions.
I think Brett is one of the best out there, and he asks good questions. So I have
good.
Yeah, I have high hopes for this. Andy, great to have you on. We'll see what happens in 3 weeks.
Thanks, Mark. Talk to you soon.
I am kind of baffled, though, by the whole thing with this announcement that she's going to sit down with Brett Baer. I don't get it. By the way, on this Indigenous Peoples Day, let's hear from Kamala from the past.
People did not want to deal and accept and most importantly admit that we are the scene of a crime when it comes to what we did with slavery and Jim Crow and institutionalized racism in this country.
So she gets to Columbus Day, Indigenous Peoples Day. This is an older clip, by the way.
And we have to be honest about that. We have to be honest. We have to be honest.
So we have to be honest.
I'm not sure if we do.
We should. We should be honest.
Okay.
Because if we're not honest, we are, one, not going to deal with the vestiges of all of that harm. And we're not going to correct course. And we're not going to be true to our values and our morals. And so, similarly, when it comes to Indigenous Americans, the Indigenous people,
here we go,
there is a lot of work that we still have to do. And I appreciate and applaud your point and your effort, and count me in on support.
Yes, count her in on support. I love this. Libs of TikTok tweeted this out earlier. Columbus is evil. He stole land. Therefore, we no longer celebrate him. Instead, we celebrate Stone Age tribes that ate people, sacrificed children, and also stole land. That was great. Really was. Good line from them. We're coming back. Well, I've compiled a good selection of audio with the help of our new producer, Ethan Hannaford, of the SNL bit from the other night with former cast members doing a lot better than current cast members, playing Kamala Harris and Tim Walz. And also, yeah. I mean, Andy Samberg as Doug Emhoff was just epic. It really was. So that will be featured in Audio Cut of the Day coming up here in just a couple of minutes. Right now, this guy's going to spend a lot of time with us on election night in 3 weeks. Former State Senator John Lamping, a Reardon Roundtable veteran, with us this afternoon, talk a little politics, some local politics as well. John, how are you this afternoon?
I couldn't be better, Mark. What a beautiful Monday, huh?
It is absolutely gorgeous. You see the picture of my daughter's deer over the weekend?
I did. Congratulations.
Yeah, she did pretty well. Now, as I told the audience, I shared this earlier, her we can only shoot does this weekend. It was like a special doe season. And Friday afternoon, she had a big buck just staring us down for like 8 minutes. So she had to pay her dues, John, but that's all part of deer hunting, right?
That's right. That's cool. Congratulations. I know that she's put a lot of effort into it, and it's exciting that she's successful so early in life. She's certainly hooked for life.
Absolutely, and I'm excited. I tried to get my boys hooked and didn't work with them, but she's been driving this one completely. Let's talk some politics. I want to get to the presidential scene in just a moment, but there is a state Senate race that I'd like to focus in on here in the next couple of weeks because it's a pretty important one. It's former State Rep David Gregory against Democrat Joe Pereles, and that's the 15th district seat that was held, John, by Andrew Koenig, right? But he term limited out.
That's right. It's really interesting. You know, during this cycle here in Missouri, you know, there's obviously we have Amendment 3 in the ballot, and, you know, kind of everyone's kind of angling for how is Amendment 3 going to change the trajectory of some race out there. And it's this district, Senate District 15, Ground Zero is kind of Chesterfield. I think this is the one that's going to have the greatest impact. The Amendment 3 is going to have the greatest impact on. And, you know, for us, for, you know, I used to live in St. Louis County, long lifetime Republican. And this is really the last state Senate seat that could be primarily in St. Louis County. So it's shaping up to be quite a barn burner.
So this is, you mentioned abortion. That's a big part of this. This Perelis guy, and I don't know him at all. He's hammering Gregory in ads. There's a lot of PAC money that's coming in. They are claiming that he wrote the state's current abortion ban. And the campaign has fired back. Look, they want these TV stations to stop playing that ad because they think it's deceptive and untrue. What would you say to that?
Well, I think it's kind of fair game in the 21st century. I mean, most of the television campaigns or ads are outright lies. So this one's close enough to where it's not coming down, that's for sure. So what's interesting here is the candidate, Joe Perelis, is a very good candidate. So what happens in every state Senate cycle, if possible, the Democrats try to find a great candidate, and then the Republicans try to find a seat that really should be Democrat, that they, if they put enough money into it, can keep it. And that's a little bit like this time around, where David Gregory is a very good candidate, but he was in the House long enough and he aspired to be a statewide candidate, that he really worked hard on lots of issues that are good for statewide Missouri, but not necessarily so good for suburban St. Louis. You know, Joe Perelis is an accomplished business executive who worked for the Drury Corporation. The Drury family is a very big donor to conservative causes. I don't know where they are in this race. And so this will be the marquee race. This will be where both sides will probably spend over $1 million. And there's even a more special significance. So Missouri Senate is 34 seats. And so if you hold 24 of the 34, you have a supermajority in the Senate. And so just to put it in context, in 2010, when I took office, I was the 26th senator, 26-8. Well, we're down to 24-10, and the district in Columbia, Caleb Rowden's district, will be going to Stephen Weber, a Democrat. And if the Democrats can win this 15th district, then the Republicans in the Senate will not have a supermajority. So it's really significant in Jeff City levels. And then I do think that this is the one race that Amendment 3 is going to play out, you know, as much as Ray Hartman would like to knock off Ann Wagner on the issue. This one's going to have an impact.
I think it might also, and then, you know, you've done a great job here of painting the landscape and how that could potentially, you know, change if this one, and I didn't know that, so Caleb's seat, that's pretty much a done deal. Did the not a worthy Republican emerge from that primary?
No, Stephen Weber is a very formidable political person. Rowden was able to beat him 8 years ago when I think we spent $2.2 million. And, you know, Rowden, was a very moderate senator. So it's not like he propped up the conservative side of that district. And Stephen Weber is going to cruise to a very easy victory there. There's a Democrat held seat in Kansas City that there's a chance Republicans could take it. The Republicans have a very good night. It's currently held by a Democrat. It's more the moderate seat. But really, the marquee state Senate race is right here in the 15th. And think about this, Mark. Like, this is, Jane Cunningham had this seat. John Loudon had this seat. Eric Schmidt had part of the seat. You know, you always had the more often than not, you had the most conservative,
right?
Republican in the county because it was such an overwhelmingly Republican seat. Last time around, when Koenig won it 8 years ago, the district basically lost to Trump. I think Trump barely cleared it, and Koenig was a great ground guy. But this time around, they've got a good candidate and they've got good issues.
Well,
and like I said, the fact that David set himself up to run statewide, not to run suburban St. Louis County.
But what I hear from you here, just kind of, you know, listening through the tea leaves here, is that it sounds like Gregory's in trouble here.
Well, I think for me, like, you know, we're going to do election coverage that night, and I think this is kind of canary in the coal mine. I think if we watch this state Senate seat, we'll get a lot of indications about how well Amendment 3 is or isn't doing. My understanding with Amendment 3 is that everyone in St. Louis County is all jazzed up about it, but the rest of the state, including the blue areas, are not so much so. So it may be that Amendment 3 somehow does not win, but I think that's the seat, you know, as the night goes on that night, I'll be watching the vote count in that district as a way, not just for the race itself, but maybe an indicator of how overwhelmingly Amendment 3 is passing in St. Louis County.
Absolutely. And John, I'm glad you just mentioned that. He's going to spend some time with me, quality time on election night as we do our coverage here in a few weeks. So let me kind of move to the national election right now. You and I have talked throughout this campaign. We get to this period, as I've sort of described last week in August, where things weren't seemingly going very well for Trump. Look, the media was all in on Harris after Biden gets out. She has the convention. You know, it's the rah-rah. You know, all that stuff lasts until about mid-September, and then things start to turn because people start to get to know the Democrats in this ticket. And, you know, I think things have swung in a really positive direction for Trump. Carl Cannon said something when he was with me last Thursday that certainly resonated. And, John, you would remember this certainly from, 2016. Trump had some stumbles even in 2016 in September, but he closed extremely strong. And that seemingly is what's happening right now.
Yeah, I checked my calendar. You and I spoke on October 3rd. It was a few days after the VP debate, and I think that was the first time where both of us, and I certainly felt that the tide had turned, that it felt like things were moving back towards Trump. And I think, that's 11 days ago, and I think every day since then, not only has Trump gotten better and stronger and disciplined, I don't think we've seen a candidate implode the way she's imploding. It seems like every day there's the new clip. I mean, if you've seen the clip about her and condemning Columbus Day, and then this Christopher Rufo article about her plagiarizing a book she co-wrote in 2009, it's like every day, that every time she does an interview, people get to know her that much more. My understanding is in generic ballots, the first time in over 20 years, Republicans are ahead of Democrats all across the country. So I can't wait. We're coming up, but 3 weeks from tomorrow, and I think all indications seem to think that it's going to be one of two things, either a very good night or a historically good night.
So, the Wall Street Journal, I mentioned this earlier in the show, the Wall Street Journal did a piece over the weekend about the gender issue and the sports issue with biological men competing against women in particular. This is something, obviously, Trump's been talking about. J.D. Vance, a lot of us have been talking about it for a long time. I've been frustrated, John, that this is not part of a debate, that the moderators are too afraid to ask that question because they know where the majority of the American people are. But I can't help but think, and I saw a lot of ads. Look, Harris has been running a lot of polished ads. I mentioned that, but I saw these gender ads over the weekend when I'm watching college football and NFL, and they're going to resonate with people. They're going to resonate with middle of the road voters for sure.
Yeah, and I think it's you don't even need ads to have it resonate. I think that men know the Democratic Party is more interested in dudes that want to become women than dudes that want to be dudes. I think I'm quoting what's his name from CNN. Who comes on your show?
Jennings. Jennings.
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's too late. I think that the Democrat, and look, let's just be honest, the Democratic Party really isn't interested in white men at all. And then they're interested in black men when it comes time
for
election time. And it's too late. They can't turn it around. I guess if you send Tim Walz out, have them do a little bit more hunting. And just think about it. Your daughter can hunt circles around Tim Walz.
Oh, my God. She already can, and she's only 9 and a half. By the way, did you see – I'm going to play some of this here for audio cut of the day. But did you see Saturday Night Live on Saturday with Dana Carvey and Jim Gaffigan and Maya Rudolph again? Because, look, they're pretty damn funny. Now, when they try to impersonate Trump and Vance, it falls flat. But the mocking of the president and this ticket has been very effective. Finally, it only took them, 6 years to get there. But it was really funny.
I think about it. It's just 3 weeks ago when they first came on, they had Dana Carvey come back on and do Joe Biden. And think about it. It took 3.5 years, all the material, all the laughs that could have been had. And they've done more in 3 weeks than they did in 3.5 years.
There is no doubt.
Yeah, there's no doubt.
Lorne Michaels should be ashamed of themselves for letting go. There was so much great material there, and they didn't touch it because they thought that they had to be, they didn't want to give Trump a window to come back into the scene, and they failed on that front as well. By the way, John, here's another bit of history I heard earlier that you probably know, and I hadn't really given much thought to it, but maybe this does have an effect. It's been since Martin Van Buren, outside of George Herbert Walker Bush, when a vice president has won the White House. Now, that's rather stunning, isn't it? Obviously, Gerald Ford gets there from, a different reason. But, with a vice president in an administration that's not popular, hard for me to believe that she can win this thing.
Well, she's not going to win this thing unless somebody does something really egregious with respect to, ballot integrity. It's not surprising. We're a country of change. The way a constitutional republic works, the way it works in practice is you kind of go back and forth, and you and you go to the right a little bit, to the left a little bit, you find compromise. And, you know, after 4 of 8 years of one approach to governing, the country is usually ready for to see what the other side has to say, what might be their opportunity. And secondly, to sit around for 4 or 8 years as a vice president waiting for the opportunity to run for president, it's just not a very good thing to be doing. It doesn't create a lot of momentum going forward. I'd be curious to see with this, if Trump and Vance are only there for 4 years, if J.D. doesn't assert himself more specifically into the administration, take on a role that he wouldn't otherwise take on. But having said that, think about all the young men and women that will be available to run for office in 4 year time. So maybe J.D. will break the mold. She's not going to do it. I mean, think about this, Mark. I was going back and forth with our friend Jane today. Kamala Harris has never, she's never been voted for. No one's ever voted for Kamala.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
She, in the primaries in 2024. So Jane will finally have a chance to vote for Kamala. I'm sure she's been waiting all these years to do it. But anyway, she's
Believe me, they're not that excited. They just hate Trump. All right, Lappy, great to talk with you. Have a great week. We'll talk. Enjoy that weather, and we'll talk soon.
Sounds great. Take care.
Oh, yeah. A little new Toto for you here this afternoon. Do you know this song, Sue?
Wait.
I'll Supply the Love.
No way.
Oh, yeah. I hadn't heard this one in a little while.
This
so
makes me happy.
I was inspired today for sure. Yeah.
Okay, I can just kind of adding it right now.
I can just play the whole damn song, probably. I love me some
awesome.
Toto every once in a while. But you know what? We got to do this, unfortunately.
Stand by. Playback ready. Now, the audio cut of the day.
All right, so look, Saturday Night Live started a couple of weeks ago. The new season, they had, Maya Rudolph come in and play Kamala Harris. Finally, they decided to get funny.
Exactly.
Dana Carvey is doing Biden. Epic. They brought Andy Samberg back to do Doug Emhoff, Kamala's husband. And they have, who am I missing here? I am missing one person here.
Who?
Well, we're going to find out because
Walls?
We're going to play. Yeah, Tim Walz,
yes,
Jim Gaffigan. Sorry. So they played the Family Feud on SNL. Whoop, that didn't work, did it? Well, we're not going to be able to use that clip. We're having the worst.
We are. It's just a Monday.
The worst problem with, I don't think I'm going to be able to execute this. I'll try. One of the things that I told you earlier was they were very funny on the Democrats, but on the Trump side of the equation, it kind of sucked. Uh-oh, this is not going to work at all, is it?
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Hold on, here comes
Ethan. Nope, none of it's going to work. This happens every once in a while with this computer, and I have no idea why it happens, but unfortunately, audio cut of the day is going to be the Toto song, Sue.
Well,
it's
a good one.
Because I've got nothing else.
It's a good one.
Yeah, well, we're just going to have to go with that, unfortunately. Man, that was going to be so good.
I'm sorry.
I don't know. I fell flat twice today because we had issues with the monologue. I had audio issues there. I couldn't hear what I was trying to play, so that sucked. Good start for a Monday. Then audio cut of the day sucked. So I guess what you can say is I've come full circle on this show. It sucked from the start. It sucked at the end. We'll try to do better tomorrow. Have a great Monday night.
Get more at 971talk.com.